Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Jay Stevens Podcast, part of the Off the Ball Network. This is episode 216, dedicated to a man who on August 16th, 2008, broke the world record in the 100-meter dash during the Beijing Olympics, Mr. Usain Bolt. And as always, thank you for listening and downloading another episode of the podcast. On today's episode, we'll talk a little bit about the alliance that three college football conferences might form here very, very soon. We'll also touch on and discuss the Mouse at the Palace documentary that just hit the Netflix. We begin today's show talking about the NFL preseason and the proper way to assess and analyze what we're going to watch over the next few weeks. Jay has been away for a while. When I put the schedule together for this month, I had no idea that I would come back the first official full week of NFL preseason football. I had no idea. My brother got married on the 6th of August, and then the following week had some other things to deal with, and I'm back today, and I had no idea when I did this, the schedule would fall, so Jay could kind of talk NFL preseason football during week one of NFL preseason football. Well, by the time you listen to this, the first week will be over, and then you will have plenty of time to discuss, decompress, analyze, overanalyze, triple analyze, go to the barbershop, hear conversations about Justin Fields and his performance for the Chicago Bears, about Trevor Lawrence and his performance for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Will it be Trevor Lawrence? Will it be Sunshine? Will it be Gardner Minshew, who was the starting quarterback for the Jacksonville Jaguars, Indianapolis Colts? If you're a fan of that team, will it be Jacob Eason? Will it be Sam Ehlinger? Because currently, right now, your starting quarterback at QB1, Carson Wentz, is out. What will it be? Will Zach Wilson be the guy? Will Trey Lance get the nod over Jimmy G? There are so many things we could talk about based off of how these players are performing, and this is the perfect time to remind everybody, this is the preseason. Don't overthink it. It's just that simple. Preseason football is simply that. Preseason, not regular season, not postseason, preseason. That P-R-E has so much weight into how I believe we, all of us, as a collective unit, as sports fans, as podcast hosts, as maybe someone that works for a television network, we should all look at this and take it as it's practice. It's practice right in front of us. The speed of the game is not the speed of what's going to happen week one. The physicality is going to get ramped up week one of the NFL regular season. And we all know postseason play, it's a different animal. We see it every single year. I have already seen on the Twitter. I have already seen on the Instagram. People going crazy over preseason stats. You can go out there and look at the preseason stats. You can look, go out there and look and see, well, he did this. How did Tom Brady do in his first preseason game? Oh, Justin Fields had better numbers than Tom Brady. Justin Fields is going to be that guy. I'm going to tell you, slow down. Don't go crazy, because we're going to get to week one of the NFL season, and you might get Jay to come back on here and say, remember that time we talked about in episode 216, episode 216, where we discussed the proper approach to the NFL preseason? You might think in your head and say, well, yeah, I remember that. What are you getting at, Jay? Well, I'm getting at, you're going to quickly realize week one, week two, week three, week four of the preseason ain't nothing like week one of the regular season. Nothing like that at all. Go back a long time ago, maybe before some of you were born, depending on your age, 1998 preseason. Ryan Leaf, Peyton Manning played against each other. I believe Ryan Leaf and Peyton Manning were Heisman finalists in the 1997 season in college football. Ultimately, the Heisman Trophy was won by Mr. Charles Woodson. Oh, might I add, a young man that played at Marshall, Randy Moss, was a part of that foursome that were finalists that were there in New York at the Heisman ceremony when the award was given to and awarded to Mr. Charles Woodson. But Ryan Leaf and Peyton Manning, two of the most highly anticipated appearances and debuts in the NFL that year at quarterback, at the quarterback position, Ryan Leaf played better than Peyton Manning their first preseason game when they played against each other. Well, they were on the field at the same time. Can't say they played against each other. They're both quarterbacks, never on the field at the same exact time. But we see how the careers went. Ryan Leaf transitioning from college to the NFL, he will say it's a whole lot harder than what you think it is mentally, taking things in, the speed of the game. Peyton Manning, rough rookie year. But we have seen, we can look back and see how his career has gone. Don't get wrapped up. Don't get caught up inside of what goes on in the preseason. It's the preseason, not the regular season. They're two different things. Let's go ahead and take a trip to the offices of the Big Ten, ACC, and Pac-12 commissioners because they have been discussing a possible alliance, and I got some interesting thoughts about what might happen very, very soon. It's almost like we're going back in time. Literally, with college football, there was a cycle that has been going on, and it seems like we're going back to the beginning of said cycle. Now, not all the way back to the beginning, but we're going backwards instead of constantly moving forward to improve the sport. College football, I've always wondered why, well, I know why, but I've always wondered when and hoped it would happen soon that there would be a governing body, one voice governing the sport, calling the shots. College football is in a really, really interesting, weird, abnormal place that there is no governing body over college football at the D1A or FBS level. And when it comes to decisions such as what took place last year, where there was something that could affect everybody, the response to the COVID, and I say that very importantly, because it was not the COVID. The virus cannot dictate what happens. It's our response to the virus that dictates what happens around us and how people around us respond to the COVID or a virus. So the response to the COVID last year was different by conference. The SEC did something different. The ACC did something different. The Big Ten, the Pac-12, the Big 12, the AAC, the MAC, all these conferences did something a little bit different. And we're looking at things now, and it seems like down the road, if it happens again, the conferences right now might do something a little bit different. The Pac-12, I believe, recently announced that if a team cannot play due to COVID, it will be ruled a forfeit. I was calling for that last year. One of the few people that called for that last year. Not the only. One of the few people that called for that last year. Didn't happen, and it was a hot mess when games could not be played last year. Just a hot mess. I think you would have had more games played. I think you would have had more teams not get nervous in their response to the COVID, and they would have played more games, treated it more like the flu, and gone forward with it. But we saw what happened last year when the conferences who are in charge of the college football run things and how they were responding to the COVID. Well, this year right now, we have already had about 3.5 weeks ago, we had the announcement, the initial announcement that Texas and Oklahoma are feeling out and really seeking and are very serious about moving to the SEC. Before we knew it, it was made official that Texas and Oklahoma would be future members of the Southeastern Conference no later than the 2025 season. I think it was July 1st of 2025. I firmly believe that'll happen before then, but we'll have to wait and see what happens over the next few years, maybe next few months, as far as money dollar amounts. I believe there's a $76 million buyout to leave the Big 12 Conference. I believe also Big 12 teams, they will go from making $39 million a year, or the athletic department's $39 million, I believe, from TV deals to $9 million. I mean, something stupid in regards to how much money you're going to lose by your two biggest brands leaving the conference. But it's all about that TV money. It's all about going to then the school or the conference that ran things together, and you see exactly ran things a good way in their eyes, and you see exactly what happened. I also have heard that there was talks that Texas and Oklahoma have reached out to the Big Ten. The Big Ten wanted Texas, not Oklahoma, and that's how that one did not go through for them to go from going to the Big 12 to the Big Ten. They went from the Big 12 to the SEC. This alliance, I know I said all that to lead up to this situation here. The alliance that's being discussed right now between the Big Ten, Pac-12, and ACC is very interesting to me. Differences now, but interesting to the Bowl Coalition, which was formed in the 1992 season. Prior to the 1992 season, there were back-to-back co-national champions in college football. One of the weirdest things I've ever heard is co-national champions in college. This isn't something where you can literally have a tie. Say it's a running race and you have two people that run a 10.123 100 meter dash. That's a tie. Now, would they race again? Probably, but that would be a tie because electronically they're 10.123. You can't get any. Now, if you keep going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and their time is literally exactly the same, that's the same. That's exactly how things are. That would be a tie. But when you have a team sport, how in the world do you have a tie? Well, the coaches poll and the AP poll, they would award different national champions, thus being two trophies that were sent to these schools because they were awarded national champions via two separate polls. Even during the BCS era, there was the same similar thing. There was one year, I believe, the USC won the national championship, and then Oklahoma got a share of the national championship and was a co-national champion. Really, really weird. The BCS tried to get away from that, but you know how the voters are. Things are a little bit different. The Bowl Coalition, which was formed in the 1992 season, it was only between these following conferences. Now, you're going to notice there are some conferences that are left out. The SEC, the Big 8, which is now the Big 12, the Southwest Conference, which is no longer a thing, the ACC, and the Big East, which is only a thing in basketball. It did fold, and now it's back in basketball. Also, it included in the independent Notre Dame and seven bowl games. The Orange Bowl, the Sugar Bowl, the Cotton Bowl, the Fiesta Bowl, the Gator Bowl, the John Hancock / Sun Bowl, and only for the 92 season, the Blockbuster Bowl. Yeah, it's a lot. Now, the one thing you heard was the old school Pac-10 and the old school and new and current Big Ten, Pac-12 back then was now Pac-12. Those schools in the Pac-10 and Big Ten, they had the agreement and a contractual agreement with the Rose Bowl. And the Rose Bowl said, hey, look, we're not going to leave our contract with these conferences, so they would not be involved. From the Bowl Coalition, which was 92, 93, 94, to the Bowl Alliance, 95, 96, 97, 97 season, you had a co-national champion again, which is what the Bowl Coalition was trying to get away from. 97 season, the Michigan Wolverines won the national championship under Lloyd Carr. Also had that Heisman Trophy winner with Charles Woodson, and it was a co-national champion that year as well, which is when the BCS was birthed. You have conferences, you have people in charge not getting along, not being on the same page, and then you form something which is still flawed, and then you form something again in 94, which is still flawed. Ultimately, I think it was because the Southwest Conference ultimately did fold, so they had to get a new kind of agreement together over the next three seasons. The BCS ultimately had alterations. It was originally just four bowl games, then it went to four BCS bowl games, plus one for the national championship game, which is when the national championship began to be played. I believe after the first full week of January was complete, you would have that game be played on a Monday. The college football playoff was formed after the 2012 season, I believe, 2013 season. Forget exactly which one, because people didn't like the BCS and they got tired of the computers. They said, oh, how about we let humans vote? Once again, the conferences are deciding all of this. The conferences are in control. Imagine if there was one person, one commissioner or governing body ruling the entire sport. College football would not have the issues that it's currently having right now. Even if the SEC wanted to stockpile and have all the talent, if they wanted to, I bet there's somebody up top running the entire sport that would kind of veto. You know how it was when David Stern vetoed that Chris Paul trade to the Lakers because at the time, the New Orleans team, was it the Pelicans at the time? New Orleans Hornets back then. The Hornets were ran and owned by the league because they didn't have an owner, and they said, oh, it would have been an unfair advantage, and would have been like the league is trying to run things. Well, okay, cool. Do whatever you want. You still vetoed something that probably that everybody thinks should have happened. So the SEC wants all these schools, and I get it. They want the TV money. They don't have the CBS contract anymore. They're going to the ESPN. Okay, whatever you want. But they're currently doing things and trying to stockpile. We've heard about super conferences. They're well on their way to do that. But this Pac-12, Big Ten, ACC alliance, you're going to find that this is a work. This is mainly to help with working and voting together on main issues, major issues in college football, such as the college football playoff expansion. NCAA governance changes, these three conferences will be a part of that, and also form somewhat of a scheduling pact. These three conferences together will be 41 teams. In my estimation, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but in the way that I view the math, 41 teams is greater than 16. There's ultimate veto power. Oh, if you want to go by college football powers, you got USC, you got Ohio State, you got Clemson over there in the ACC. And the SEC is mainly going to have, now granted, they're going to have Alabama, you're going to have Oklahoma. Do you put Texas in there? Do you put Auburn in there? Do you put Georgia in there? Do you put Florida in there? They're going to have some power, some people that hold some weight by just their symbol being right in front of you. But this alliance here reminds me so much of the bowl coalition that happened in the early 90s, where you had some conferences that were a part of it, and you had some that were not. The Big 12 is the odd man out. I do believe at some point the Big 12 will probably fold and its member institutions will go to other conferences. Will they go to the SEC, the ACC, the Pac-12, the Big 10? What will they do? Will they go to a group of five school? That's to be determined. But what we have seen lately in college football is the lack of one person running the sport. We're keep going through this cycle. People in college football get disgruntled. Somebody makes decisions. Or something happens, people get disgruntled, all of a sudden they form a pact, they form a grouping, or they form something like the BCS. Oh, we're tired of that. Oh, how about we add another game? Oh, that's not right with us. I believe the BCS National Championship game was added after there were some co-national champions, which the BCS was supposed to get away from. Also at that time, they were not supposed to be that. The poll actually went against the agreement that they had put together, so that both polls would vote the BCS National Championship game winner as the national champion of that season. The poll itself went against that agreement. It's college football. People are never on the same page. Oh, might I add, I know I mentioned the NCAA governance. The NCAA does not run FBS college football. The conferences do. There are 10 of them. Think about you and your friends. You got 10 friends together hanging out, doing some good, just having some fun, goofing off, all that good stuff. All of a sudden, you got one decision to make. It's very hard to get 10 people on the same page. Oh, might I add here, there are about 60 schools that are represented between the Power 5 conferences. So if you're trying to tell me that you got 10 people, let's move it down to 5, but then add that they're representing 60 people, 60 schools that have thousands and thousands and thousands of people there. Yeah, you see the confusion there. Just the math doesn't make sense, and it's very confusing why college football is this way. The conferences have tried their hardest to run things in college football. Before you know it, I firmly believe there will be somebody running the sport as a commissioner, a governing body, very similar to the NCAA, but only for college football. Will it take them breaking away and forming their own little grouping? I don't know. But honestly, something needs to happen, because this alliance reminds me too much of something that happened in the past, coming back to happen now. And I don't believe college football wants this cycle to keep going back and forth. Go forward a few years, go back 5. Go forward 3 years, go back 10. College football doesn't want that. Sports don't want that. You and I don't want that. Will this affect the product on the field? Probably not. But in the offseason, just like we're doing right now, we will have all of these abnormal discussions, because college football is ran by the conferences and they can't get right. Thank you, the people that put this together, for the timing of this documentary, Untold, Mouse at the Palace, hitting the Netflix when it did. Because if you waited a few more weeks, the timing would have been bad, college football would have been here, and you would not have gotten the same number of clicks or eyeballs on the television to watch this documentary as you will right now. I remember this oh so well. I was a youngster. I was in high school. Remember watching, this was a Friday night. I was going back and forth between watching the Pacers and Pistons basketball game on the ESPN and a local high school football game that was going on during the state tournament. So I'm going back and forth, and your boy doesn't like commercials, so this was perfect. Get a little high school football action, too cold to go to the game. A little NBA action, it was in Detroit. Didn't have the chance to go to Detroit at the time to watch the game. So the TV, the television, my old house, my parents' first house, when we moved to Indianapolis, downstairs in the basement. I remember this very, very well. Going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And then all of a sudden, I go right back to the ESPN right before the brawl started. Remember the foul that Ron Artest had on Ben Wallace? Very, very well remember how Ben Wallace reacted to him getting fouled. I remember Ron Artest laying on the scorer's table. I remember the beer being thrown, the cup being thrown, and all of a sudden, all hell broke loose. It was a madhouse. It was ridiculous. And if you watch this documentary, you will remember and see that the gentleman that Jermaine O'Neal hit, if Jermaine O'Neal did not slip, that man's face would have been, oh my goodness, would have been bad what happened to his face. Would have been really, really horrible. But to the player's defense, and I'm on the player's side here, not so much going into the stands. We'll talk about that here in a second. But if somebody comes into your place of employment, the place, this box that's your, or this rectangle, that is your place of employment that night, and all of a sudden when fans are throwing things at you and fans are hitting players and your teammate is getting held by in a headlock as a fan of the opposing team, over and over and over and over again, is hitting him in the face, I bet you would react in a similar way as Jermaine O'Neal. Now, maybe you would not have punched the individual. You may have given him a two-hand shove very, very harshly, very, very roughly at that time. But you would do what Jermaine O'Neal did to protect yourself. One of the odd things about this, and I'm going to say, there was a lot in this documentary that was common knowledge. There was some video footage that they brought in, security cameras that never before seen, which that whole phrase, never before seen footage, is absolutely a lie because somebody had to see it to put it in the documentary. But y'all are going to say, ooh, it's never before seen footage. Let's just be real. It was seen. Somebody saw it. Numerous people saw it prior to it hitting the Netflix. But y'all want to say things never before seen footage to get more eyeballs. And I get it. It's a way to promote something that is rare that many people have not seen before. But in this fight, Jamal Tinsley, who was not featured, who did not talk, and I was hoping that they had some more players discuss and talk during this documentary. More players from the Pacers, more players from the Pistons, maybe a Rick Carlisle, a Larry Brown, getting them featured there. Because when you're the head coach, you're seeing things from a very different eye or lens than the players or the security guards or the people that are at the scores table or the broadcasters. You're seeing things from a very, very, very different lens. You may know about some back and forth that's going on, but there's a good chance you don't know about everything going on with this team, with these individuals at that point in time. Jamal Tinsley was the one that went to Ron Artest, and everybody knows Ron Artest at that time was going through some mental things. He had a psychiatrist, and him laying on the scores table was something his psychiatrist said, do some counting, I believe it was count to five, and if worse comes to worse, lay down on your back and just relax and let everything unfold. So he did what his psychiatrist was encouraging him and telling him to do. But Jamal Tinsley was the one that told Ron Artest, hey, Ron, you can get your foul now. Now, I'm not surprised he wasn't in the documentary based off of that. But I also am kind of surprised at the same time. I know I said I'm surprised. I am surprised because I think his point of view, even if it's for 5 minutes or 5 seconds, would have been very, very good to hear and him be honest and say, this is my fault. I went to Ron. I knew there was a foul that Ron could get from the previous playoff series that these two teams played. And I was the one that went to Ron, and Ben Wallace reacted in the way that he did, not knowing that Ben Wallace had a family member, a relative, recently passed away. And the rest was history. Steven Jackson, one of the most funniest situations during this documentary, funniest to me, was there was a police officer that was talking. He was there in the arena during the fight, sitting with a talk to Reggie Miller. But he describes, he says there's a man in a suit, and he basically comes out and says, I didn't know I was talking to Reggie Miller at the time when I was during the fight and I saw this guy in a suit. I had no idea Reggie Miller was the one I was talking to. And the next thing you hear is Steven Jackson say, how you not know Reggie Miller's on the Indiana Pacers? And I'm sitting here like, hey, Jack, I like that. I like that a lot because, I mean, honestly, you get a skinny guy in a suit. There's not many people as skinny as Reggie Miller. He's very abnormally skinny, a toothpick, some may want to say, and you're just not sure. I mean, if I'm a police officer and I'm at the game, I'm roaming to see, oh, well, I know Reggie Miller's over here, and I know Lindsey Hunter's over here, and I know, Corliss Williamson was on this Pistons team too. Yeah, no, random name, I know. Trust me, it just popped into my head. He's over here, and we got Rip Hamilton over here on the Pistons, and we got Jamal Tisdale, we got Rondo Test. I'm trying to make sure that I know where every player is before the game just because I want to see it. Just be honest, one more thing. You're not going to find many guys 6'7" at a basketball game that skinny in a suit. Come on, I'm just throwing things out there. But this documentary, I think it was good, very well put together. And looking back at it, it reminds us of just how wild fans can get. No, let me go a little bit further. Y'all might not like this. Just how abnormal people can get. Sometimes we can get when things don't go our way, when we're put into a bad situation, when somebody pushes us literally, puts our backs against the wall, the way that we react. Sometimes people react as the fans did in that situation. It's rare. But sometimes they react in a way that just is unruly, it's cruel, it's ugly. They deserve to go to jail based off the actions that they're, the way that they're acting at that time. I'm not trying to ruffle any feathers, but I do think that there are times that we can look at this situation, not so much from the player standpoint, because the players were defending themselves. I would never advise a player to go into the stands. It happened. But the fans, the way the fans have been acting in certain places, these are rare occurrences, in certain places, we can look back at this and be like, look, our behavior, if we do one thing wrong, throwing a cup, and I'm about to get to that lady at the Rams game here in a second. If we do something, if we throw a drink at somebody else, we could start a melee, we could start a brawl, and I might go to jail based off what I did. If you did not see the social media, I was on the Twitter recently. I believe it was on Sunday afternoon or evening when I was on there. No, I took a nap after going to the gym on Sunday. And all of a sudden, I'm seeing this video circulate around the Twitter. And it's a young lady at a football game. There's a group of 5 or 6 men arguing and going back and forth. And the one guy that's yelling on my left, just figuratively speaking, on my left. Then on the right, there's probably 5 or 6 guys that he's yelling at. Well, the guy on the left, the one singular guy, he was about to leave. He was about to kind of diffuse the situation, walk away, and not have anything go forward, a fight starting. Then all of a sudden, there is a young lady that's behind the group of 5 men, probably 2 or 3 rows down, closer to the field. She has this cup in her... No, she didn't have a cup in her hand. She looked to her right. I believe this is vivid. Looked to her right and saw there was a cup in a cup holder. She picked up the cup. No joke. Picked up the cup. Threw it over the 5 or 6 men. Hit the young man that was about to walk away. And then he starts swinging. His punches weren't... You could tell he did not go to boxing class. But he starts swinging. Bam, 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 bam. Back and forth, back and forth. And if somebody behind him... This part was kind of funny. Took his shoe as a young man, the singular man that was fighting, pushed that man right there in his butt, right where the crack is, and pushed him over the chair, and then that man walked away. We saw a cup incident, the brawl, throwing it on Ron Artest. We saw what happened after that. We see a cup incident now at a preseason game, the very first one of the season, and we see what happens now. People got to watch themselves. People got to calm down because you have no idea what throwing a cup at one person will do or lead to. The mouse at the palace was one situation. Hopefully it never happens again. But there are way too many fights in the stands. Hey, fans, myself included, we got to watch what we do because talking trash to the wrong person might lead to you getting hit upside your head like that man that walked on the court who was invading and intruding on the court. That was not his place of employment. And Jermaine O'Neal took it to himself to give that man a lesson that you don't belong here, young man. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Jay Stevens Podcast. If you enjoyed what you listened to, please head to Apple Podcast and leave a 5-star review and a comment. It is greatly appreciated. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at jstevens07. Send all of your emails to jstevenspod@gmail.com. This has been episode 216 of the J. Stevens Podcast. I will see you next time.